All right, so we are holding on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, five lines from the bottom.
Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph.
Five lines from the bottom, yeah. Okay, we were discussing like this. Our Mishnah had said that our Mishnah had told us about if you shecht a mesukenes. A mesukenes is an animal that's dangerously sick. It doesn't have any particular injury that would make it a tracer, because then there's nothing to talk about. But we're talking about that it's weak, as we'll see on Amud Beis, just how weak. It may not have very long to live. You are allowed to shecht it and eat it, as we'll see. Well, that's what we're in the middle of discussing. But the question is, how do we know, Taka? Maybe, indeed, the Torah doesn't want you to eat an animal. So that's what we're in the middle of trying to figure that out. Is it maybe that we tried from maybe when the Torah asks us in the Vela, and it also includes a Mesukenes, and we brought a proof that not, maybe when the Torah tells us a Trefa, then it includes that, but also not. But we still don't have a solid proof yet that a Mesukenes should be allowed to be Shechted.
No,
that's the thing. A Trefa would be, let's say, for example, there's a hole in a lung, there's a particular aver missing, or extra, or whatever. There's something specific in the animal that you can point to and say this is injured or damaged or missing or what have you. A Mesukenes is just generally weak.
And
the other one's just a general weakness. Yeah, but there's no specific thing that you could point. And maybe there is. I mean, maybe in modern medicine, you could point to something specific.
Oh,
you could say,
right.
Yeah. Because, let's say, for example, Mr. Kennedy. Yeah. Take for example. Let's say. I mean, imagine the animal has. I don't know. Imagine the animal has leukemia. Lama Zogin. You know. I mean, I don't know if animals can get leukemia. Let's say they can.
Anemia.
Okay, anemia. Lama Zogin. Fine. Is that something that it's not going to be able to live very long with that? Of course, it's not going to happen. It doesn't have enough iron, and then it's not getting enough oxygen. Does it shape? No, because there's no specific organ that you can point to and say there's a hole here, there's something missing there. Or, okay.
Let me ask you a question. Can a tumor render an animal tracer?
An animal can't become tame while it's alive. The only kind of creature that can become tame while it's alive as a human being.
Can it become trefa?
Trefa, of course it can become trefa while it's alive, sure. That's the definition.
If you see an anatomical defect in an animal.
Oh, most trefa, yeah. You have some trefa that you're only going to discover after the animal is shafted, of course, like things in the lungs or whatever. Yeah, of course, if you see it before, then yeah, you know it's trefa. Yeah. Well, then when we talk about it in the next class, when we talk about trefas, some of them are on the outside of the animal, some of them are visible on the outside.
Detected by X-ray or whatnot.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Okay. I mean, and now that you mention it, I once saw an interesting thing. I think it was in my initial Torah. By the Parah Adruma, on the Pasuk over there, says that with the Parah Adruma, you have to check it for all the traces, for the 18 traces, which is the official number, as we'll see in the next Torah. So they ask the question, I mean, many traces are internal. How are you supposed to check it before you shaft it for the 18 traces? So somebody gives an answer, I don't remember who, that maybe Tavim Yonason is not talking about all Parah Adrumas throughout all the generations. Maybe he means only the original one that was done in the Midbar, because they had the Ananiah covered, which would work, function like an X-ray, and therefore you'd be able to see. Yeah, it's such a bar. So.
Okay. The Ananiah
covered? Yeah, there's such a bar, but the Ananiah covered. I don't know, I guess according to whoever that was, who said that bar. Yeah. All right, anyway, let's go on. Okay. So again, we're still trying to figure out how we know that a mesukenes is mutter to eat once you shecht it. Now, our Mishnah had said, you do have to have, because it's mesukenes, and therefore you can't really be sure that it's still alive by the middle or the end of the shecht, as we'll see in the Gemara. Therefore, you have to have this concept of pirkos. You have to have the animal jerked or shuddered or moved or whatever somehow to show that there was enough chayus left in it at the, you know, during the shecht. We'll see later on in Mamad Chet, we'll discuss during what part of the shecht it has to do that. But anyway, first we're trying to understand. We mentioned that in the Mishnah, that you found Ptolem, Kostlem, Main Dam, yeah. But first we have to establish the basic fact. How do we know, Bechlal, you're allowed to eat a Mesukenes? Once we put that to rest, then we can figure out, and then we can continue with discussing what exactly is valid Pirkos and what isn't. Okay. El Omehacha. The Gemara says, maybe we can try to learn it from it, like, you have a Pasuk that says, V'chelev nevela v'chelev trefa, you're also a chomolacha. You're not allowed to eat chelev, however the Pasuk says, chelev of an animal is nevela or trefa, you can use it for any kind of work, mutter b'hana, v'achol lo yisichluhu, you're just not allowed to eat it. So, v'omamar, now we learn in a Braisa, so we learn this actually in Zvachim, l'may hilch the omra ha-tora, for what purpose of halacha is the Torah telling us that? In other words, it shouldn't need to say va'achol lo yisechu. We know already from earlier psukim in Parshas Vayikra that you're not allowed to eat chaylev, so why does it have to stress again over here that you can't eat it? So what it is, obviously you're not going to think, if you're allowed to eat chaylev, if you're not allowed to eat chaylev from an animal that's shechted, there's no reason to think, and if the animal was an avela or a shreifa, that you could be allowed to eat it, that the Torah should have to tell you va'achol lo yisechu. So what is that teaching us? It means Yavei Isu Nevela V'Yochol Al Isu Chaylev. Yavei Isu Shreifa V'Yochol Al Isu Chaylev. It means the Torah is telling us that you have that if a person were to eat chaylev from a nevela or from a shreifa, he would be chayev for two lavim. Because normally you would think Ein Isu Chal Al Isu. The nevela is already also from before. The Isu of nevela or the Isu of shreifa can't be chal on it as well. Therefore, the Torah is telling you that not. If a person were to eat chaylev from a nevela, he'd be chayev malchus for eating chaylev and also for eating nevela. And the same thing with shreifa. Okay, you have some of the Rishonim learn in the Sugya in Zvachim that has a long discussion about all the pros and cons of when we say and when we don't say Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. Some one possibility is maybe it's from this pasuk that we learn this concept of Isur Chal Al Isur. Or maybe another possibility is you actually have Tanoim who hold that in many cases Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. But they would say that in that case the pasuk is telling us that this is an exception. Be that as it may, whatever the point is, that we see clearly from that, Torah is telling us that if a person were to eat chaylev from a nidavela, he's high of two malchus and the same thing for each chaylev surface. So now let's analyze that. We talk about digest.
Does it say that it's me'akev? I mean, it's only touching?
No, this isn't, they're talking about touching. You need to repeat twice, yes. Okay. We talk about digest. Today for hainu mesukenes. Now, before in the Gemara, we were arguing that maybe a mesukenes is also on the grounds of Teresa. Maybe a mesukenes is maybe a trefa is not like we were just saying that it only has an injury to one particular organ. Maybe a mesukenes is any animal that's not going to, that doesn't have very long to live, whether because of a specific injury or whether just because of some general weakness. And therefore, so if you were going to think that though, then you wouldn't need the pasuk to say that. Lichte rachmana chaylev nevela yo'ato tomalacha. Let the pasuk say like this. Chaylev of nevela, you're allowed to use for any kind of, you're allowed to use for any kind of project, any kind of work. But chaylev treifa lo yisechu, chaylev of a treifa, you're not allowed to eat. Meaning, in other words, by treifa, you would have this concept of isu chalal isu, that if a person were to eat chaylev treifa, then he's chayev double malchus. And we would know already that that automatically applies to nevela. Va'anam mina, and then we would figure out logically like this. Uma mechayev, madach, when the animal is still alive, because what the whole point is, Mr. Kenneth is not yet dead, it's going to die soon. But nevertheless, while it's alive, which again, you're thinking that Trefa includes Mr. Kenneth, also Isur Trefa Chayel al Isur Chaylev, and yet the Isur of Trefa is able to be Chal on the Isur of Chaylev, and you have Isur Chal al Isur. However, needless to say, after the animal actually died, of course the Isur Chal al Isur. There's no reason to think that the Trefa status that it had while it was alive should go away after it became an event. How could you think that a Mr. Kenneth is also on the grounds of Trefa? Then we wouldn't need the pasuk to explicitly tell us Chaylev Nevela. We could have deduced it from Trefa. The way Rashi is explaining it over here, or the way that the Rishonim explain Rashi to be saying it, it's not really a full-fledged Kavachoyner. What it is more like this. The whole point of Mr. Kenneth is that it's going to die soon. If we're arguing that puts it in the category of Trefa, that again, we're going to say that the definition of Trefa is any animal that doesn't have long to live, whether it's because of a specific injury or just because of general weakness, then already when it's in that situation, you're telling us that the chaylev of it is osur, and not only osur as general chaylev, but isu halal isur. If a person at that point were to shecht it and eat it, he would be chayev for eating chaylev as well as for eating treifa. Well then, there's no reason to think that I'm going to have a chaylev per se. There's no reason to think that if the animal dies without shechita, that isur should go away. Obviously, the isur is still going to be there.
So therefore,
the Torah should not have to tell us that chaylev nevela is osur. We could have deduced it ourselves. We would have understood that the same thing, in other words, either way, you would say when the animal's alive, whether it's in the Sukenes or Trefa, because again, hypothetically, they're the same thing. If a person were to shecht it, he'd be chayev double malchus for eating the chaylev. And if it died without shechita, he'd also know that he's chayev double malchus for eating the chaylev, because it was already also a chaylev Trefa while the animal was alive.
Why the case?
If we say Mr. Kenneth is Moser, then we understand why the Torah has to mention them individually. Because then Mr. Kenneth is not a Tereza, so therefore we would have to say there's two possibilities. You have a Mr. Kenneth, which you allow the Shech to eat it, so then it's Chaylev, a person eats a Chaylev, he's only Chayev one Malkus. Then you have, because the Shech did properly, and it's not a Tereza, and it's not an Avela. If it's a Tereza, which is different than Mr. Kenneth, then he's Chayev for that when he Shech did, and if it's an Avela, regardless how it died, then also the same thing. But if you say that a Mr. Kenneth is included in the category of Tereza, then you don't need it to say separately about Nevela because you could understand it.
You say that if he's a Chelet or a Sukenet and Mr. Kenneth is not included in the category of Tereza, he would be high of whatever.
You'd be high of one Malkus because still Chelet. Chelet is still a separate lot. Yeah. You know, let's see Chelet. Call Chelet, show the cat, the very like the Chelet, yeah. Since the pasuk here repeats, after telling us already that you're not allowed to eat chaylev, it repeats again. You're allowed to use it for malacha, but for ocha lo yisechluhu, meaning that both with nevela and with treifa, you have a separate issue of nevela or a separate issue of treifa that's chal on the issue of chaylev. You wouldn't need that if a Mr. Kenneth was a treifa. Because when the animal dies as a nevela, it was Mr. Kenneth before. It was already, the chaylev was already after, hypothetically, a treifa before, and now there's no reason to think that it could be any different. That issue won't have gone away. That implies the fact that the pasuk has to mention nevela and it has to mention treifa implies that. You have different other explanations among Tosfos has a long discussion over here, arguing with various parts of Rashi's explanation and offering some other ones. One of them being that maybe it is a real Kavah Chomer, and we're talking about the fact that we're focusing on the fact that a Treifa animal is not Metame a person when a Treifa animal, while it's alive, is not Metame a person if he touches it. A Nevela is. So therefore, we can work out a Kavah Chomer that way. Madach, when the animal was a Treifa, where it's not in the time of the person, when once he shafts it, how much more so in the Vela, which is actually in the time. That shouldn't need to. Okay. And then Tosis brings another possibility from Rabbeinu Gershom. Okay, anyway. Fine. So therefore, Elam, it's a cost of Rahman and Nevela, but since we see it's not like that, since the Pasuk did spell out Nevela and say V'chel of Nevela V'chel of Trefa separately, that means V'chel the Trefa, Labhain and Mr. Kenneth. Obviously, that means that a Trefa and a Mr. Kenneth can't be the same thing. Otherwise, as we just said, then the Pasuk wouldn't have been phrased that way. Mar Rav Ashi challenges that, he asks on that.
If it was a different category than a Trefa, it would say Mr.
No, because it's a different category than a Trefa, therefore we need Nevela and Trefa separately, because Mr. Kenneth eventually is going to die if you don't shaft it ahead, but you can't say it's anything like a Trefa, because a Trefa is actually different. A Trefa has a specific injury, so in a way, in other words, we were arguing before that a Trefa, in a way, is like less severe than a Nevela because it's still alive, but on the other hand, and less severe than a Mr. Kenneth, because not necessarily going to die right away, but on the other hand, the fact is, a Trefa, in a way, has a bigger chumrah over Mr. Kenneth, because it actually has an actual definable injury. So therefore...
Well,
so,
we're not going by injury.
No, but that's the point. In other words, that therefore, in other words, we were arguing that a Mr. Kenneth or a Trefa is eventually going to become an Avela, but now we're saying no. Yes, of course, each of them is going to become an Avela, but we're saying a Trefa is something different than a Mr. Kenneth. A Trefa has a particular injury that you can point to, and therefore that's what makes it Trefa. A Mr. Kenneth, it doesn't have any specific injury, so no, it's not a
Trefa. We know that a Mr. Kenneth is not a Trefa.
Because we just said, if it was a Trefa, then we could just say the Chelev Trefa, and we would understand Chelev Nevela from it automatically, because either kind of Trefa is eventually going to become a Nevela. And therefore, in other words, in that sense, the Trefa has no, the Trefa and the Mr. Kenneth are kind of on an equal level. Now we're saying that not, because since it spells out Nevela separately, that is because it needs to tell us that you have an animal that was Mr. Kenneth, with Chelev wasn't also under any other grounds than just being Chelev. Now it becomes a Nevela, and now you have a second issue on it of Nevela. And then you have a different track. You have an animal that was a Trefa, and that's a Trefa, and therefore right away then, while still alive already, Chelev is also as Chelev and as Trefa. That's the point.
Because
you have Nevela and Trefa listed separately. Again, if it didn't list Nevela separately, then we would say that, yes, Trefa includes Mr. Kenneth. And we would understand that once the animal actually dies, without Trefa, yeah, the same thing. The second issue that already came on it still continues to exist. But because we have the Vela listed separately, that means there's two ways to have a second Issur come on it. One where it's a Tereza, where that Issur exists already while the animal is alive, even if you were to shed it. And another one where it's in the Vela, where the Issur only kicks in after it dies.
So that could be only after death, before...
That's what we're saying. Before that, it's Mr. Kenneth, and there's no second Issur. That's the point we're making. That's exactly the point we're making. Okay, however, Master Slamabra Rabashi, the Duma La'olam Eimalach Hainu Streifa Hainu Mr. Kenneth, maybe not. Maybe after all said and done, you could argue that a Streifa and Mr. Kenneth are the same thing. Or the Ka'amut Nevela the Kasa Rachmana Lomali. You would ask, in that case, why does the Torah need to mention Nevela separately? If, as we just said, you already had a second Issur kick in while the animal was alive, regardless, whether it's a Treifa or a Mr. Kenneth, the answer is, you could say, Lahach Nevela Deleachim Akoyach Mr. Kenneth. Very simple. You can have an animal that becomes a Nevela without having gone through the stage of Mr. Kenneth. You would say, in other words, normally, yes, an animal that's Nevela means it was either Treifa or Mr. Kenneth, which now, hypothetically, we're saying are the same thing, and eventually, therefore, if it doesn't recover, or if it's not shechted ahead of time, or whatever, then it's going to become a nevela. But you have a case where an animal can be a nevela without going through that. The heichi dami shasa gistera. What would be the case? That would be where you made it a gistera. Where we learned previously in the first parak. Now, if you make the animal a gistera, you make like a deep cut down the along the back or along the sides or whatever that goes like all the way through into the inside of the body. Then the animal is considered nevela. The animal is considered nevela. They even
it can be Mr. Kenneth by definition.
That's the Gemara is asking that on the face of it, making it a gistera, and it's already at that point considered a nevela. There was no Mr. Kenneth beforehand. On the face of it, 1 minute the animal is standing there perfectly healthy, the next minute it's got a deep gash down its back or whatever, and now it became a nevela. There's no Mr. Kenneth in between. So maybe the pasuk has to tell us the chel of nevela for that case. The answer is no. Hasam nami, you actually have a Mr. Kenneth purta. No, but still, even in that case, you have. It has to have necessarily been a little bit Mr. Kenneth, mikami the lipstick l'ruba, before you cut through the majority. In other words, you're talking about, when is it a gistera? You may have a deep cut way down into the animal, or that covers like a majority of the animal's length or whatever. So yeah, I mean, but as in the process of cutting, you have a point, or you have a second over there where you didn't quite cut quite enough to make it a gistera yet, but we're already, that makes it dangerously ill, and even if you were to stop at that point, it still probably wouldn't have long to live. A Treifa, again, it might not necessarily be, because you didn't necessarily cut into one of the organs that would specifically make it a Treifa. But nevertheless, you could say that for a fraction of a second there, it's a Mr. Kenneth, and then you continue the cutting, and it makes it a Gistera, and makes it actual Nevela. But still, then, in that case, as a Nevela, it went through a brief stage of Mr. Kenneth. Okay.
And that's what it's...
So that takes care of Mahabhar Ravashi's objection. He's saying that maybe you have three kinds of nevela, the kind where it was Mr. Kenneth first, the kind where it was a Treifa first, and the kind where it wasn't anything first. And the answer is no, you really only have two kinds. Even a Sal Gistera, you had a period, but you had a brief period, a second over there, where it was Mr. Kenneth. Okay. The Eboy Sema, or another way you can answer that, how it's a valid proof, we can still use the words Vachelu Nevela, Vachelu Treifa, but we don't need this whole discussion about because it's a Treifa or versus a Mr. Kenneth and then it becomes a Nevela. We can take a different tack on it. In Cain, if indeed a nevela, not a nevela, if indeed a Mr. Kenneth and a Treifa were the same thing, in Cain, Lema, then the Pasuk could have phrased it yet a different way. Chelev nevela u'treifa. It didn't have to repeat the word chelev. Chelev, chelev, lomali. Why does it repeat the word chelev individually with each one, with nevela and Treifa? It means we can learn like this. Zuhi she'en chelba cholach mevzar. In this case, of a nevela or a Treifa, the chelev is no different than the meat of it. A person eats meat of a nevela or a treifa. He's chayev malchus for eating nevela or a treifa. The same thing as he eats the chelev. There's no difference between the meat and the chelev, except that he's going to get the double malchus for the chelev because it has a separate issur on it. The yesh lacha achera shechel b'cholak mebesara. But you have a different kind of animal where the chelev has a different status than the meat. The ezu, and what would be that case? Zu misukenes. That would be a misukenes where the meat itself is mutter because you can shecht it, but the chelev still has the issur chelev on it. So that's a proof, therefore, that Mr. Kenneth is not in that category. Otherwise, it wouldn't have repeated the word chelev by each one of them.
Yeah, but so why was it mentioned separately?
So that's why. So now we say. And now, because it says chelev nevela and chelev treifa, it means, you should know, instead of chelev nevela or treifa, it means these are the only two where you have the chelev and the meat have the same status. Whatever you chayev on for eating the meat, you're also going to be chayev for eating the chelev. As opposed to a Mr. Kenneth, if you shecht it, and it had pirkus and whatever, the meat will be mutter and the chelev will be offered. Okay.
And if you had chelev Trefer and Avela together, then you could not say that.
Right, exactly, right. Because then it could just mean, okay, yeah. Okay, the body stema, or here's another possibility, mehafa. Here's another way how we can learn that a mesukenes is mutter. Not from a pasuk in Chumash, but rather from a pasuk in Nevi. Are you going to argue? You can't. You can't, you can't derive it. But here it would be, it's a gili milta ba'alma, basically. You don't have an explicit pasuk saying you're allowed to eat a mesukenes, but we'll see, as once we go through the pasuk and analyze it, we will see that it's a known thing, that it's a known thing to Yecheskel that a mesukenes is technically mutter. Namely as follows. Okay.
So
one second. No, it's giving Milta. It's just informing us of a fact that was already known. It's not teaching us a new halacha, right? Okay, the context is like this. In Sefer Yecheskel, you have a number of times when Hashem tells Yecheskel to do different kind of symbolic things. Some of them are partially to that his Yisurim should be Mechaper for the Jewish people. Some of part of it is in order to show them, to demonstrate to the Yidden what's going to happen if they don't do Shuvah, what's going to happen with the Korban and the Golos and whatever. One of them is, you have at one point Hashem tells him, you have to be lying on your right side for this number of days, and on the left side for this number of days, for the number of years that the Jewish people have been doing Avedas. And during that time, you have to make yourself a very coarse, cheap kind of bread out of a mixture of different things, wheat and barley and peas and then millet and whatever. You have it in the health food store, the Ezekiel 4:9 bread, because that's the Perek and Pasuk. Yeah, anyway, the point is, you make yourself a bread out of it, you eat a small amount of this bread every day and a small amount and drink a small amount of water every day, and it's like you're living through, like you're pre-living through the siege of Yerushalayim when people are going to be like that. They're going to be desperate for food and they'll eat whatever's available. And then Hashem tells Yecheskel like this. So you make this whole mixture of these different grains and beans and whatnot. You make bread out of it. You've got to bake the bread. You have to have some kind of fuel. What kind of fuel should you use? Hashem tells him, use human waste for the fuel. Take human waste and burn it for the fuel. So Yecheskel protests against that with the pasuk that we're going to quote now. And then Hashem tells him, okay, fine, I'll give you a break on that. Instead of having to use human waste, you can use animal dung instead. Okay, you know what? It's a big thing, actually. I mean, in halacha, for example, you're not allowed to even make brachas. You're not allowed to say any dvarim shebekdusha when there's human waste around, but you're allowed to around animal waste as long as it doesn't smell bad. So there's a difference, you know. Anyway, so what's the pasuk where Yecheskel complains? He says, "Va'oymar." He says, "I said, Aho Hashem alekim, Oyve Hashem alekim." Aho also means like the Talmud always translates it. Accept my tefillah, please. He says, "Hine nafshi lo matumah. Behold, my nefesh, I myself, have never become tamei." Keep in mind, by the way, that Yecheskel was a kohen. He's not allowed to become tamei. So, he's not allowed to become tamei nes, right? So I have not become tamei.
Tamei nes?
The fascist, yeah. Unvelo trefa lo yachalti min urei vada. So I've never, since my youth until now, I've never eaten a velo trefa. Vlebob pib of sar pigle. And into my mouth there never came meat of pigle. Now, on a pshat level, you could say, and you have some of the mafarshim say on the pasuk that okay, he's talking about actual black letter halachas in Torah that he has to keep, but he's stressing, I've always been careful in keeping all the mitzvahs, so please don't make me do this. But the Gemara doesn't like that way of looking at it because, of course, he's a tzaddik and a navi. Of course, he didn't do any blatant avodah for eating the velo tereza. Yeah, so let our Dak says, for example, I mean, like the Kohen have an extra mitzvah not to eat the velo tereza, but whatever. The point is that the Gemara wants to understand. Yeah, but that's what he's saying. That's the point. The Gemara is saying the Gemara wants to understand that Yecheskel is not just saying I kept the mitzvahs as it said, whatever it says in Shulchan Aruch. There's no chiddush in that. The chiddush is, he's going to say that I kept myself to an even higher standard than is required in halacha. So because of that, please give me a break about this. Okay, so what does each of these things represent? One second, let's go through the thing first. When he says, Hine nafshi lo matumah, behold, I have never allowed myself to become tameh, what does he mean by that? Shalahir hauti bayoyim lovely de tumah balayla. I never had thought, machshavas zaris, that would cause me that I would become tamei, that I'd become a balkari by now.
And still thought about
he knows for a fact. A person knows. A person can control their thoughts and what they thought about. Maybe. He's saying, I never had hirhurim by day that should cause me to have kari balayla. In other words, first of all, keep in mind, the person dreams, the Gemara says in Barakas, the person tends to dream about what they think about during the day. So if he keeps himself from hirhurim during the day, it means that he's not likely to come the day keri balayla. And by the way, you have, for example, the story involving the Tzemach Tzedek, where one time his sons are sitting and learning a piece of Gemara or something, and then Tzemach Tzedek walks into the room and then gives them a shaft in it, and afterwards he says that you should know it's 35 years since I've even thought of this Gemara. And later on, the Rav Marash, or one of the other sons of the Tzemach Tzedek, was telling over the story, he says, the chiddush isn't that after 35 years he could still remember the sugya well enough to be able to explain it to us. The chiddush is that he knew for a fact that during those 35 years he'd never thought about it. That his machshavas was so mesudra in his mind that he knew what he had thought about and what he hadn't thought about.
How can that be when he was rehearsing a shas every month?
Where do you have the Tzemach Tzedek rehearsed shas every month? I never heard of such a thing. Okay, anyway, whatever. Maybe it wasn't a thing in shas, maybe it was in some other area, or whatever. Anyway. Okay. So this is Yechezkel saying, now, so again, you have to ask, Tosfos asks, so what's the chiddush? You're not allowed, in general, you're not allowed to do that. A person is not allowed to do that, to have your burden by day. But Tosfos says, okay, but still, the fact of the matter is, most people have a hard time with that. They have a Gemara in Bava Basra that says, Shloshe Dvarim Einon Amitzel Meheb B'chol Yoyim, and one of them is Hira Avera. So it may be a thing in Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to do it, but nevertheless, it's still a high madriga that a person is actually able to follow through on that. And therefore, Tadat Yechezkel is saying that about himself, is telling that to Hashem.
Right.
Okay. Then he continues, Unvelo Trefa La Chalti Min Urai. When he continues, I never ate Nevelo Trefa from my youth, from throughout my life. What does that mean? Again, it obviously doesn't mean plain Nevelo and Trefa. That you have, it says in Torah, you're not allowed to. I mean, Shloya Chalti, this is why we're bringing this in. Shloya Chalti Besar Kois Me'olam. I never ate from an animal about which they said Kois. Kois is the Aramaic word for Shech. Meaning an animal that is misukenis, which is what we're dealing with here in the sugya, where it's so weak and dangerously sick that people say, check it quickly before it dies, and we lose the value of it. So the fact that he's saying, I never ate from such an animal, implies, al pi alocha, you're allowed to. He's saying, I held myself to a higher standard. And one reason, so what's the higher standard? And one explanation is, because...
He says before that, he never ate from a nevela.
No, so when, that's the thing. So this is what the Gemara is saying. Is when he says nevela, it's treifel, or healthy, he doesn't just mean I didn't eat something that's actually nevela or actually treifel. There's no chiddush in that. The chiddush is he didn't even eat from the misukenis. Now, why would a misukenis be called nevela or treifel?
Exactly.
Because, first of all, we have the whole discussion over here where we thought that... Okay, but we might have thought, first of all, that, but it's still the hypothetical. One thing. Hypothetically, first of all, it might be, you know, we thought that it could be in those categories. But besides that, also, one idea is, look, in our Mishnah, we said that the animal has to do pirkus during or after the shechita, as we're going to discuss soon, because otherwise it might have died.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is, I mean, yeah, once you have pirkus, then fine, it's good enough, we have a chazaka, therefore, that the animal was alive. But nevertheless, there is always that tiny little possibility that even with pirkus, that it really was dead. So therefore, so Yechezkel is saying that I held myself to a higher standard than that. I didn't eat it, but it's kind of because there might be that tiny chance that maybe it really was nevela ruchesa. But the fact is, we see that it's allowed off the halacha, otherwise he has no reason to mention it.
And what's interesting that he says that just after speaking of a nevela trefa, and you could
he uses the word nevela trefa, but we're meant to understand shalaya chalti b'sar kois me'olam. And it's good, in Shulchan Aruch, technically you're allowed to eat from a sekenes, but a baal nefesh shouldn't. It's a valid chumra, like Yechezkel did, to not do that. The Ramban has an interesting idea about it. The Ramban says, after all, though, if the animal belongs to a yid, go ahead and check it anyway and see what can be done with the meat. Because first, you don't want to cause a yid a loss. If the animal belongs to a guy, then fine, don't bother checking it. You go ahead and be machmir like this, and then yeah. Okay.
But how do we know that when he says
because we have the Kabbalah. We have the Kabbalah that when he said a nevela or treifa lo yachalti, he obviously does not mean real nevela or real treifa because there's no chiddush in him saying that. Just like there's no chiddush in him saying I never broke Shabbos or I never.
It's a
mesukenes. We are meant to understand that that's what he meant. That the Chachamim had the Kabbalah going back probably to Yechezkel himself. That when he said that and when he wrote it down in his paper, this is what he meant. That, yeah. When he says, well, like Bob appeared the sire of Piggle, that there never came into my mouth meat of Piggle, so again, obviously it doesn't mean plain old Piggle, because that a person is high card is eating, and again, there's no chiddush that he didn't eat it.
Right.
Yeah. It means, it means I did not eat meat from an animal where there was a shayla on it, and you had to ask the rav whether it's mutter or not.
Then again, it's Sukenes?
No, that's a different thing than the Sukenes. The Sukenes is where the animal is weak.
Yeah.
Chacham is something else. You have a suffix in Hilchot Shayla. You have an animal where you have something in it that it might be treifa. You have all the time people bring chickens and animals or whatever to a rock. So this is you have the famous expression a shayla mach treif that comes from this gemara. So that Yechezkel was saying that I would consider the thing as if it was Tzar Tigel and I wouldn't eat from it. We're going to learn, by the way, in the next parak that there is a caveat to that. It depends. When we say Shahar HaBachachav, what were the grounds on which he was murdered? If it's something that the person brought the Shiloh because they partially don't know the halacha, and the Rav opens up a Shulchan Aruch, let's say, and it says they're black on white, that this is halacha, the animal is kosher, then no problem, even a Baal Nefesh can eat from it. What we're talking about over here, Shahar HaBachachav, is where it's a matter of a judgment call. You have cases in halacha where it's not black and white, it's a gray area, and you have to consider, okay, you know, maybe, okay, but this, you know, this rishon says this, but this rishon says that way, and yeah, it's a topic, whatever. So that's the kind of thing that we're saying that a Baal Nefesh, like Yechezkel, should be machmir on himself in 19. Okay. Mishum Reb Nosson, Amar in the name of Reb Nosson, they said a different explanation of the Lord Bava Fib Tzav Tigel, Shalai Achalti, Mibahem, Shalai Humu Mat Nekseha, that Yechezkel was saying another thing, I never ate from an animal where the Machonis, the Zroyal, Chayayim, Bekeva, were not first taken out and given to a Kohen. Now, Yechezkel himself is a Kohen. He could have eaten it without Matanis being taken out, because he himself can eat them. As we're going to learn later on in Parak Zoriel Chayag Bekeva, one of the last talks in the Roman Sefer. You have these three parts that are supposed to be given to the Kohen, but a Kohen can check an animal, and automatically they belong to him, and he can eat them. Yechezkel was saying, a Chiddush, that nevertheless, I made sure to separate those out first.
Which parts were that?
The Zoriel Chayag Bekeva. We'll learn about the details of them in a few months, Be'ez Hashem, towards the end of the Sefer, but the foreleg, the Zroya is the foreleg, the Chayayim are the cheeks, and the Keva is one of the stomachs. L'chayayim is the cheeks, also the tongue, whatever. Those are the matonis of an animal, a chulin, that you're supposed to give to a Kohen after the animal is shechted.
He
could have just not separated them out himself and eaten them as any part of the animal, but he nevertheless separated them out first. That's the point.
What does it say?
So that means, in other words, that he's holding himself to a higher standard than is required in halacha. That's the point. By the way, as far as why are we calling an animal, why are we calling behemoth shahar HaBachachav, why is it because we're using the term b'sar pigul for it? So Marsha says, because after all, what is pigul? It involves a machshava in the korban. What happens when a person brings a case for the shiloh to a rav, and the rav has to consider the something? There's also a machshava involved, maybe it's kosher, maybe not. In fact, the Sam Sofer, by the way, says in a Siddur Shavuotan, and he says, you see from that, the machshava for a moment there that it might have been possible is enough to have an effect on it and make it considered in a certain bedakistic way, b'sar pigul. So the point is so that's the point. If you tell me that a Mesukenet is actually Mutter, Heiner, or both to the Yechezkel. So that's the Chiddush that Yechezkel was saying on himself, even though a Mesukenet is allowed, but since it's Me'isa, Rashi says, since it's Me'ustik, then I didn't eat it. So therefore he has a right on that basis to ask Hashem for a special dispensation. Eli, I'm a Tassira. She's telling me a Mesukenet is also anyway. My Rabot to the Yechezkel. What's the Chiddush? He's saying I never ate Traifers. We wouldn't have expected him to eat Traifers. So that's a clear proof we're left with two clear proofs that a Mesukenet is Mutter, one because of the repetition of Chalev Nevela, Chalev Treifa, and the other because Yechezkel was telling Hashem that I never ate Nevela or Treifa, meaning not just actual Nevela or Treifa, but also Bifar Kois Kois, the meat of a Mesukenet, therefore that means in and of itself a Mesukenet is Mutter. Okay. Now let's talk about, what is the definition? Heifi Gamma Mesukenet. What's the definition of a Mesukenet? If you stand the animal up and it won't stay standing. Now, so you have some of the post-skim say that can mean even now making it stand up can be two different things. It can be that you actually physically picked the animal up and stood it on its legs, or it can be like you hit it with a stick or you yelled at it or whatever and it stood up. You have some to show him understand that even the first way is enough. But you have the Ramal brings that no, that's not enough. Because if you just physically pick up the animal, it stays standing on its leg, that doesn't show it's not Mr. Tennis. That shows, okay, it's a block of wood, it's able to stay standing. The fact that you can yell at it or hit it with a stick or whatever, and it's able to have the energy to get up, that shows it's not Mr. Tennis. It's not going to be. Okay. Yeah. Well, so you have this. Technically, you have the Mechaba versus the Ramah. According to the Mechaba, it would seem that even if you actually physically made it stand, then it would be enough to lifted it up. But Rav Chanina Bashlemi says in the name of Rav, Afilu Echelot Bekanya. Even if, what if the animal is too weak to stand up, but it still has jaws and its teeth are still working fine, so it's still able to eat Bekanya, which means like pieces of wood, small pieces of wood. It's a bit of an exaggeration, but in other words, even if it has still a very strong ability to chew food, that's not enough to show that it's not a Mesukenet. The main thing is whether it can actually stand up. And one thing the Mefarshim say is because sometimes you have, like, even a person or an animal that's about to die, like, they still have, you know, they're still able to rally enough strength to be able to eat or whatever. So the fact that it's able to eat doesn't prove anything about the strength in the rest of its body. It can still be considered misogynic. Rami Bayechezkel, I'm after the Echelus Kodesh. Rami Bayechezkel says even if it eats Kodesh, Kodesh on the face of it means being, so like he's going even beyond the Kodesh, small piece of wood, like even if it's able to chomp into a big piece of wood. Some of them, of course, you explain that Kodesh maybe means like Kura, I think the Me'iri says that means like Kura, it means like hard palm, which it starts off soft, eventually it becomes hard, but whatever, even if the animal is able to eat that, it doesn't show that it's strong enough to not be considered a Mefarshim. The key thing is it has to be able to stand up.
Okay. You need all these conditions?
No, just one. That's the thing. All you need is that it stands up. If you see that it's still strong enough to eat, even hard things, that doesn't prove anything. If it can't stand up, then if it can't stay standing, whatever, still Mr. Kenneth.
The chance is
Mr. Kenneth. You're allowed to check and eat it, that's the minimum that it shouldn't be a Mr. Kenneth. That therefore you don't need this whole Pirkus business yet. If it can't even stay standing, come on, midnight time, it can't stay standing, then you need Pirkus in order for it.
Okay.
Besura Masna.
Whether
it's not cheating hard things or whatever is neither of you nor there, right? Besura Masna, and Sura is that's how they learned this discussion that we just said, that we had three Amiroyim involved. We had Rabbi Yehuda Amirav, we had Rabbi Chanina Bashlani, and we had Rami Bayechezkel. But Pumbedista Masna, and Pumbedista, they learned the statements a little differently. Heichi dami Mr. Kenneth, they learned that it went like this. What is a Mr. Kenneth? Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, Toshma Amidin Noisiv Einayin Medet, that if you try to make it stand up and it won't stay standing, Vasvilu Echelos Vekoyesh, even if it's able to eat pieces of wood. In other words, he's saying the same thing, but unlike in the first version where the Chalina Vashlanya added that, in the second version, Rav Yehuda added that in the name of Rav.
How can he eat it when he's standing or
standing? It doesn't matter.
It doesn't change.
And Rami Bayechezkel says, even if it's able to eat curds. So again, same thing, just with a difference of who said what.
Okay.
Fine. Now we have to talk about, so what is the valid amount of pirkus? So in our Mishnah, we had four Tanarim that gave opinions about it. We had Rav Shimon Gamliel, or later on in the Gemara, it says Rav Gamliel, says that it has to be actually to focus the yad of a regel. It has to make a movement during or after, as we'll see, the shchita with its arm and with its leg. We had Rabbi Eliezer said it's enough with zinka. Zinka means like it made like a cough or made some kind of motion with its throat that makes the blood spurt out. That's considered enough, says Rabbi Eliezer. That makes the blood spurt out, and that's considered pirkus. That's considered enough pirkus, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Yes. Right. Rav Shimon said, related to that, that if a person checks by night, and so he doesn't know whether there was Pirkus, but the next morning he finds the walls full of blood, and we'll see soon in the Gemara, the walls means the inside of the neck, the inside of the neck. Then because it could happen, you checked at night. Then it falls to kosher, because obviously there was Zinka, and Rabbi Eliezer says Zinka is enough. And then you have a fourth opinion in the Mishnah that the Chachamim say it has to move either an arm or a leg. It doesn't have to be both, like Rav Shimon Gamliel says, or it shakes its tail. Shakash is another. It wags its tail. Okay. So now let's get into this. Ashkechinu Shmuel the Talmidim the Rav. Shmuel one time met up with the Talmidim of Rav. Amalahu, my Amar Rav in Sekenes. So he asked them, what did Rav say about what are the criteria, what is the valid amount of pirkus that you need if you shechted a Mr. Kenneth, that you should be able to eat it without having to worry that it was Neveva? So they told him, Chochi Amar Rav, this is what Rav said, Goya, if the animal made noise, like the Goya is like bleeding or mooing or whatever, yeah, the Hitilari, or if the animal excreted waste, that's also considered that it had enough chayas to it. The kishkeshaba adna, or if it wiggled its ear, one or the other, any one of these, it mooed, or it defecated, or it wiggled its ear. If it is a pirkus, then that's considered a pirkus, and even if it was a mesokanus, the animal is kosher to eat. Amalahu, the Shmuel says, I'm surprised. It's shrichalayla abal azuzi uni. Are you telling me that Rav requires that the animal has to move its ear? That's a lot of chayos that you're telling me it has to have for that to be considered pirkus. Why should it have to be that much? Why does he call him Abba, by the way? So Rashi says that Abba is a title of respect. Rav was Rav Shmuel used to call Rav Abba out of respect because Rav was older and a Talmud of Rebbe, etc. There's a different explanation. Tosfos mentions that Tosfos brings from the Aruch that Rav's first name was Abba. His real name was Reb Abba. Rav was the title they gave him of respect. These are the Rav of the Yidden in Babel. So Shmuel, being his Chava, called him by his first name. Anyway, the point is, Shani Omer, so Shmuel says, I don't agree that you need that much movement for it to be considered Pirkus. I say, Kol She'ena Dvarim Shan Mita Oisa. As long as the animal did something that's not something that it just does as an instinctive motion that an animal does as dying, then that's considered Pirkus. Yeah, Shitta Mukabetis gives the Girsa a little bit differently. Shamesa, he said. Anything that a dying animal wouldn't automatically be doing anyway, just from natural muscle contractions or whatever. So it doesn't have to be as much as mooing or deprecating or whatever. Even something less than that would be good enough. My ninu dvarim shamesa, he said. So what do we mean by that? What are things that an animal might do automatically, as an automatic reflex while it's dying that don't show that it has fire? Amar of Onan, the Dini Pashi Li Minei Marshmul, Marshmul, or Rebbe Shmuel, personally explained to me what he meant was like this. Hoisa Yada Kufa of Shatta, if the animal's leg before you shechted it was bent, and then during or after the shechita it extended it, that is Dabar Shamita Oisa. That's something that automatically happens as a reflex when an animal is dying because the muscles relax. That doesn't prove that's not Pirkus. That doesn't prove that the animal had any tires. Still, it might have been available. Again, all of this... Right. Only... Again, you have to keep in mind, this is all for a Mesukenis. For an animal that was otherwise healthy before the Shkita, we're saying you don't... Our Mishnah said, you don't need any of that because most animals have a Chazaka that they're healthy and they're not going to all of a sudden die in the middle of the Shkita. We're talking strictly about a Mesukenis.
They could eat both.
That one second. That's what we're going to know. Pshuta, v'kosufa, but if it was the other way around, if the arm or the leg was extended and the animal pulled it back, that is considered dvarim shena mista oisa. That's not something that happens as an automatic reflex when an animal is dying. That means there was chayas there. That's considered pirkus.
And if it does both?
If it does both, obviously that's even more. That's even better. Yeah, obviously that would be even better. So Gemara says, Maiko Mashmalan. Okay, if that's what Shmuel means, that that's the difference between what Mista does automatically versus, in this case, where the animal has chayus, my kamash malon. And what does Shmuel tell us? What's the chiddush of what Shmuel is telling us? We know that already from the Mishnah. Tanena, we learned from the Mishnah. Behema daka shaposha yadav layach dira. If a behema daka, a small animal, like a sheep or a goat, extended out its foreleg, v'layach dira, and it didn't pull it back in, sula, and it's called the shchita is possible, she'ena ela hitzoach nefesh, because that's just an automatic reflex that happens when the chayus is leaving it. It doesn't show that it had enough chayus to survive the shchita.
This whole thing is talking about.
Implying that if the animal flexed it back inward, then it would be kosher. So what is Shmuel telling us? The answer is, even Masnissim, yeah, but if you only had our Mishnah, have Amina, Davka de Kaifa, like you just said, Davka de Kaifa uposhta bahadra Kaifa law. Maybe the Mishnah would imply, what do you need for Pirkus? You need, if the leg was out like this, you need it to pull it back in, uposhta, and then extend it out, or bahadra Kaifa, or maybe not three, but maybe the Kaifa. Let's say the leg was already flexed, was already inward. Maybe it would have to say, you'd have to move it out and back in, because the Mishnah is saying, it only moves it out, that's only a hisos nefesh, that's no good. But so maybe it means, then the only way is you have to start out with it flexed, then extended, then flexed again. Only is that good. You still wouldn't know that if it was already extended and it bent it inward and flexed it, maybe not. Kamash Malon, that is Shmuel's Chiddush. A one-direction motion is good enough as long as it's towards the body, not away from it.
That makes it what?
That makes it good. That makes it that there was enough chayus that it means that it was still alive during the Shchitah. And then it would be kosher. Okay, so in other words, so far, we're saying that you have three possibilities. You have the leg was flexed, and it extended it out. The Mishnah says that's no good. It's only hitzos nefesh. It was extended out, and it flexed it back in. That's what Shmuel is telling us. We wouldn't have known from the Mishnah that it's good. And then you have, if it was flexed, and it extended and flexed it back, that's the Mishnah that he's telling us is good.
Yeah. Why can't you make a kavah chomer?
What kind of kavah chomer?
Flexing it is enough. Flexing it, extending it, and reflexing
it. If it was originally flexed, and the Mishnah tells us, if it extended it out, you wouldn't know from the Mishnah the other way around. If it was extended and it brought it back inward, it's still only a one-direction motion, maybe that's not enough. Maybe that's also a soft nefesh. Comes Shmuel and tells us, no, it's not just a question of what direct, it's not just a question of one or two directions. Is it dvorim sham misa oyster, or is it dvorim she'ena misa oyster? Is it an automatic reflex that any dying animal would do, or is it something that shows that it had chayim? Flexing it inward is considered that.
It could have been initially, we could have thought that flexing, extending, flexion is, could be either chayim or misa.
No. Yeah, okay. Then and there. If you had motions in both directions, then obviously that's chayim. If you only have a motion in one direction, if it's outward, the Mishnah is telling us that's no good. We wouldn't know from the Mishnah if there was only a motion inward. That is what Shmuel was coming and telling us. Even one motion, as long as it's inward, is good enough. If you have two motions, outward and inward, or inward and outward, then of course the Mishnah is telling us that's good. Okay. Okay. Fine. Mason, the Gemara says, okay, I have a contradiction to this, though. We learn in a bright that of Yosi Omer, the shaila is like this. The maestri is, we said that, okay, so far we have like this. Rav had said the definition of pirkus is that it is any of the following. It makes a sound, it defecates, or it wags its ear, it wiggles its ear. Shmuel had said you don't even need that. Shmuel had said as long as it's something that a dying animal wouldn't do by reflex anyway. Now, what we learn in a Brach, that Rabbi Yosi Omer, Rabbi Meir used to say, the rule is like this, Goya b'shach shchita, if the animal just moves or makes a noise during shchita, aims at pirkus, that's not considered pirkus, not like Rav said. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yosi Omer, Mishmar, and Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yosi says in the name of Rabbi Yosi, afilu hikila ri'i, even if the animal defecated, the kishka shabbat nava, or even if wriggled its tail, aims at pirkus, it's also not pirkus. So Rav told us all those three things are considered pirkus, and we have the Braita telling us here it's not. Yeah. Kasha goya, goya, kasha ria, ri. So you have a contradiction about all those things. The answer is goya, goya, like kasha. There's no contradiction between the two cases where the animal moves because hada avikala, hada amikala. What Rav is talking about where it gave a full heavy sound like it would usually do, that shows it still had chayus. The Braita is talking about where it was a weak kind of sound. That's just a soft niche. Omi Rashi says, by the way, means like dim. Like a strong sound versus a dim one. Ri nami like kasha, and there's no contradiction between the two cases of the animal defecating, because hob kandash tesis can be masreza. One is the Braita is talking about where it just dribbled out, in other words, where the dung falls out right next to the animal. So it didn't necessarily have enough muscular strength to push it out to any distance. That doesn't show that there's chayus. Yeah, basically. As opposed to, kind of mascheredus, as opposed to if it's able to squirt it out when it flies some distance, then it shows it had enough chayus. Just doesn't mean like it dribbled out. It just dropped right near the thumb, perhaps. Says, yeah. Matshrevis, lemerachok, so obviously that shows chayus. That shows that there was still enough chayus in the animal to actually be able to do that. Okay, and the Gemara hasn't dealt with the Gemara hasn't dealt about kishkisha, because the difference is, Rav had mentioned kishkisha ba'ozna, that it wriggled its ear. The Braita had mentioned that it wriggled its tail. That's different. An ear is a lot of chayus. That's why Shmuel used that expression, that why does Rav require it to do as much as wriggling its ear? As opposed to the wiggle of tail, that doesn't require that much chayus. Yeah, it's fine, but nevertheless, it still doesn't require it. It's much easier to move, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Fine.
More motion in here than in the tail?
Yeah, I guess. Okay.
Tail is further away.
Yeah, it's further away, nevertheless, though, still. I mean, maybe that's the point. So a little wiggling of the tail doesn't necessarily demonstrate chayus. But wiggling an ear, that's it. But they're far away doesn't really make that much of a difference. I mean, nerve impulses travel fast enough through the body regardless. Yeah. Okay.
You see the tail moving much more by animals.
Then you see the ear moving, yeah? Yeah. Okay, yeah, but not as much, I guess. Fine. So now we have to talk about at what point during the shchita do you need this pirkus? So, Amr of shchita, pirkus sh'amru b'soif shchita. When we say this whole concept that you need pirkus, again, by Behemoth Mr. Kenneth, we're talking about that the pirkus has to be at the end of the shchita. Now, what do we mean by the end? So, my b'soif shchita, the emsa shchita, really what he means is the middle of the shchita. As opposed to if it was only by the beginning of the shchita, because then you could have, fine, at the beginning of the shchita, the animal was still alive, but then it died before the shchita was completed. So that doesn't help us anyway. Yeah, so, all right, so it takes a certain amount of time to do a shchita. Yeah. Okay, so Rambam...
How you define a shchita?
Okay. No, even if we're talking about roiv simonim. So you do actually have some mafarshim who explain that emsa could mean after you've cut the two simonim, and soif could mean after you've cut the roiv of the two simonim, and soif shchita would be after you cut through all of them. Okay, but... Okay. Rashi gives two explanations. One is... it's not two explanations, sorry. Rashi says like this. Rav Chista is saying, I heard from my rabbeim the words b'soif shchita. But I, Rav Chista, am explaining that what do we mean soif shchita? We don't really mean only at the end, that it actually has to do it at the end of the shchita. What we mean is it has to do it sometime during the shchita. Be'emsa shchita. Sometime during the shchita. Later on in the sugya, Rashi explains actually, well, we'll get to the different other opinions that we have over here, but Rashi ends up explaining that what we may need is that the pirkus is still going on after the shchita is completed. But otherwise, you have the same problem. It may have died right before you finished, right before you got to the 51% or whatever. Other Rishonim disagree with that point. But okay, anyway. So Rav Chista says, where do I get this idea that I heard from my rabbi, Soif Shchita, really means the middle of the Shchita? So I get it. It's because we learned in our Mishnah. Behema Daka Shaposhti Yad of Alayasuda. We said a Behema Daka, if it only extended out its arm, if there's leg, or its full leg, whatever, Alayasuda, it didn't flex it, Psula, we said it's possible. So we have to ask, Eman, at what point during the Shchita are we saying that the animal did this? We were saying that it's a problem. Elaim of a Soif Shchita, do we mean literally at the end of the Shchita, after you finished cutting the amount that you need for Shchita, then it extended its hand? What's the problem? How long are you expecting the animal to live for? Obviously, after you did a proper shchita, that it shouldn't be enough after you finish the whole shchita that it should do that push it yad. What's the problem? Obviously, it must mean that we're talking about in the middle of the shchita. So therefore, again, if it flexes, what Rav Chista is arguing is like this: once you finish the proper shchita, if after that the animal does any kind of motion, the Sama shows that there was enough chayas in it. Because after the shchita, after you get proper shchita, if it still has enough energy in the body to be able to move, to be able to move an arm, even if it's only extending it out, obviously it means it wasn't dead. It wasn't dead at the end of the shchita. So what's the problem? Obviously, if the Mishnah is telling us it's a problem, it must mean that we're talking about the middle of the shchita. Therefore, if it extends its arm, if it brings its arm back in, if it flexes it, good. It means there's enough chayus, and then you're good. You know you're able to finish the shchita, and there's not going to be a problem. But if not, then...
Now, listen, when you shift a bird...
we're talking about animals. Birds, we're talking about animals.
Right. It keeps running around.
Birds, we'll get to later. Hold on. Again. Remember, keep this in mind the whole time that the whole thing we're talking about over here is doctor by Mr. Tennis. By a bird, it doesn't matter. Not doesn't matter. By a healthy animal or a healthy bird, it doesn't matter. So when you do kaparis, for example, the bird may flap around. It's neither here nor there. Even if it didn't move a muscle, it would still be cautious.
There's no
Mr. Tennis for birds. Birds can be Mr. Tennis too. But the ones they use for kaparis, the same thing. We said Shema Midnight Zemega Hemenis. Yeah, it can't stand up on its own. But the ones used for kaparis, for example, are not like that. Amalei Rava, so Rava says that's not a proof. La'olam the soif shchita, because maybe after all the Mishnah is talking about where it extended out its arm at the end of shchita. Why? So why would it be a problem? Then you're arguing Makora, once you did a whole shchita, kosher the shchita, what's the problem? Any kind of motion should be enough. No, Shani Omer, Rava says, no, I would say kol she'ena oisa pain the soif shchita. No, if it doesn't actually do it at the end of shchita, that at least at the end of shchita it's doing the poshta, and that then after the shchita is finished it does hechriva, then no good. Then you know already the neshama was taken away before you finished the shchita. In other words, Rava is saying that, it's possible. You're arguing that, look, after the shchita, what are you expecting it to still be alive at that point? No, but the point is, if at soif shchita, all it did, as you're finishing the shchita, it only does poshta, that's no good, because it may mean that it died before you actually finished. So that's 51% or whatever, yeah.
It's
doing at the end, fine, as you're reaching the 51%, but you still might, So that's so far we have Rav Chisda saying it means in the middle, and Rava saying it means it has to be at the end. And he was where Rashi mentioned that it means, in other words, that you have to have that it starts at the end and continues even after it. Again, you have other Rishonim who disagree with Rashi on that and say that part is not necessary. Okay. Rav Nachman says no. Here's a third possibility. Pirkos Traver, but Tchilas Shreita. No, the Pirkos we're talking about that you need for Mitzvah Tenet is even at the beginning. Omer of Nachmeis Chminam in the law. So where am I getting that from? It's an end. Again, we live in our Mishnah. Omer of Shimon. Hashoichet Balayla. If somebody checks during the night, so you can't clearly see whether there was Pirkos or not. Ulamacha must have stolen Malayim Dam. The next morning he finds that the walls are full of blood. We said Sheila. The Mishnah says, Rav Shimon says the animal would be kosher. Shezinka, because then it obviously means that it did zinka. That it coughed or whatever, threw up or whatever it is exactly that caused blood to spurt out and get on the walls. Uchamidas Rabbi Eliezer, so therefore that's following Rabbi Eliezer's view that Zinuk is considered enough pirkus. And V'Amar Shmuel, and Shmuel says, what do we mean by koislim? We don't mean the walls of the building that he did the shchit in, of the room that he did the shchit in. Koislim, they shchit the shenu. We mean the walls of the neck, of the inside of the neck, the area where the shchit is done.
So they have to show...
Blood. Well, you have to see that there's blood there. The point is... No, in other words, you have... I've never seen an animal right after it's chested, but you have parts to the neck that you wouldn't expect to find a huge amount of blood in. Here you'd find, maybe, okay, you cut the capillaries over there, you'd have a tiny amount of blood or whatever. You wouldn't have a serious amount of blood that you have after shita, unless there was zinu.
Within the neck?
Within some part, within the coastal base of shita, the walls of the base of shita. Maybe it means on the outside of the neck, actually. It could well mean that. I mean, it could mean on the outside of the neck, or around the place. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Okay, so the point, and Rashi explains the reason why we need to add Shmuel's point is because, like this, if Koslin meant literally the walls of the room where you shechted, then you could say obviously that itself from where you find the blood on the wall, you'll know whether there was zinuk or not, because if it's high up on the wall, it means there was zinuk, and if it's lower on the wall, it means that there wasn't. As Rashba says a little bit similarly, you could figure where in the room was I standing when I shechted. Whichever wall I was standing close to, I'd expect to see the blood on. But now that Shmuel tells us that Koslin doesn't mean the walls of the room, it means the walls of the neck, it means the sides of the neck. Well then, So if you're telling me that all you need is Pirkos at the beginning of the Shechita, says Rav Nachman Yitzchak Shapir, okay, then we understand what Rav Shimon is saying, that would work. Eli, I'm so shchita, but if you're saying it's not enough if it happened at the beginning of the shchita, it has to be at the middle or at the end. Leichosh doma b'tchilas shchita zinka. How do you know? Maybe it did this zinka at the beginning of the shchita, and that's not enough for it to be kosher according to the shchita and according to Rava. So the fact that Rav Shimon is saying you can come the next day and for the next morning and find kosher malayim dam, and that's good enough. That's the thing. Sort of Nachamayitzchak says, obviously, at least from Rav Shimon's, fine, the other opinions in the Gemara, in the Mishnah don't accept that the Zinuk is considered enough Pirkos by itself. But in other words, they would agree with the basic concept that they're not arguing in the Mishnah where during the Shechita, but at what point during the Shechita the Pirkos has to take place. They're arguing how much movement do you need to be considered Pirkos. But apparently, all of them agree on the part, is it the beginning, the middle, or the end, what stage of the Shechita you need the Pirkos. So if Rav Shimon is telling us that you find Koslim Malayim Dam, and it's good enough, obviously that means it must be good enough even if it happened at the beginning of the Shechita. Otherwise, how are you going to know? Maybe the Zinuk happened at the beginning, then the animal dies, and you won't know because you shechted at night, and you can't see. The fact that Rav Shimon is saying it's kosher, and again, the other Chachamim aren't disagreeing with him and saying, yeah, but you're implying that it's good at the beginning, and we say it has to be at the middle or the end, seems like everybody agrees it can be at the beginning, says Rav Nachman.
Yeah, it's not about the beginning. It happens at the beginning.
But that's the question. So Nachman said, according to Rav Chisda or according to Rava, it couldn't work. Because what if the Zinuk was at the beginning, and then, but you need Pirkos in the middle or at the end, you find Solim Malayim Dam the next day, but you don't know what stage of the Shechita took place. If Rav Shimon is saying it's good, obviously it must be good even at the first stage of the Shechita.
Why? Right.
Because otherwise you wouldn't know. You Shechted at night. You don't know when the Zinuk took place. You don't know whether it was at the beginning or the middle or the end. And the fact that Rav Shimon says, as long as you see evidence of zinuk, then it's good enough, means it doesn't matter at what point during the shchita the zinuk took place. Yeah. So that's what Nachum proof that even at the beginning, it's good.
No.
Zinuk is a type of pill. Zinuk, the only reason, the blood squirting out, because of the zinuk, because the animal coughs or blows or whatever it is that causes the blood to squirt out, that Rav Shimon is saying, according to Rav Eliezer's opinion that says that zinuk is enough, then we can deduce from that that even if you don't know, even if you didn't see the zinuk taking place, as long as you found evidence of it afterwards, then it's good enough. Which means that it was alive.
Why would you think that zinuk at the beginning of it would not be enough?
According to the Chista and according to the Rava, it's not. The Chista said it has to be in the middle, and Rava said it has to be at the end. So we're not going to be supposed to tell them. Can't be. Then how do you understand? How are Rav Chista and Rava? How are you understanding Rav Shimon's opinion?
Those two agree, obviously, that happens in the beginning, it's also good.
Who, Rav Chista and Rava? No, Rav Chista clearly said it has to be in the middle, because if it's at the beginning, maybe the animal died before you finish the
morning.
That's the question. That's what not made the point. Yeah. The answer is, okay. So before we get to the answer, first the Dilma shiny zinuk da'adif. So you would answer, okay, but maybe the difference is maybe zinuk is better than other pirkus. Maybe other pirkus is a weak kind of thing. Therefore, a pistol or a rava would have to say you have it later on. Yeah, motion of the arm or leg or whatever. But maybe zinuk is such a strong indicator of chayus that maybe it's good enough even at the beginning. Because if it happened even at the beginning, you could say fine, the animal wasn't going to die during the next couple of seconds while you finish shafting. No. Can't be. Me or this? How could you say that zinuk is a better kind of pirkus than moving an arm or a leg or whatever? Well, it's not. We said in the Mishnah. First, we brought Rabbi Gamliel's or Shimon Gamliel's opinion that you needed to move yad v'regel, and then we had Rabbi Eliezer omit daya in zinka, and Rabbi Eliezer says it's enough if it's zinka. But obviously, zinka is a weaker kind of movement than moving a yad v'regel.
What does
zinka means that the animal breathed out or coughed or whatever, it did something, it did some kind of strong muscular thing to cause the blood to spurt out to a distance. Okay. The answer is Kal Midram Gamliel for Adif Midrabar. Okay, but you could answer that what Rabbi Eliezer, when he says Daya in Zinka, he means relative to Ram Gamliel, who's saying you need Yad and Regal. Yeah, Zinka shows less strength than that. But relative to the Rabbanan of the Mishnah, who said, meet either Yad or Regal, Zinka is stronger than that. The Halacha, Yad or Regal. So in other words, we would say like, the Halacha is not like Rav Shimon Gamliel or Rav Gamliel. The Halacha is like the Chachamim, or either Yad or Regal. Rebbe Eliezer's Zinka is even stronger than Yad or Regal. So you can answer, Rav Chista or Rav could say like this. If we're talking the Pirkus is only Yad or only Regal, then it needs to be according to Rav Chista in the middle and according to Rava at the end, because otherwise it just shows it didn't have enough chayus. But you could argue, if Zinka, that's such a strong indicator of chayus, it means that it had even more chayus than what it takes to move an arm or a leg, that would mean it would work even at the beginning of the Shchita. But maybe so you could use that to answer Rav Chista and Rava so that they're not contradictory by the Mishnah. However, Amar Ravina, but Ravina says that's not the end of the discussion, because Amarli Sama Bar Chilkai says to me, Akshi Bar Avod Bar Avobram, the father of Bar Avobram found a problem with that. Now, Bar Avobram means the son of Avobram. So the father of the son of Avobram is Avobram. So Rashi says, why'd they call him that? Because the son was famous. Everybody knew the son as Bar Avobram. Nobody knew the father that well, so therefore, like, how do you know who he is? He's the father of the famous Bar Avobram. But Amrila Achor de Bar Avobram. Another version is that it's the brother of Bar Avobram who brought up the point. Anyway, the point is Umidrabanon mi Adif. How could you think that Zinuk, which is what Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shimon are mentioning, is a stronger indicator of chayus than moving an arm or a leg, which the Chacham is mentioning? But it's not. After all, we said in the Mishnah, the Chachamim omen ad shetefarkus biyad oibiregel. The Chachamim say it's not kosher unless it does pirkus with an arm or with a leg. Ad implies that they're being machmir. So aheya. So Rabbanan aheya kindly. Which of the previous opinions are the Rabbanan addressing? Ilema ad Ram Gamliel, are they addressing Ram Gamliel? They're being more makel. And if he said you need both yad and regal, they're saying one or the other. So they shouldn't use the expression ad shi falkus, the yad and regal, which implies, you know, what you said is not good enough, we need more. they're saying just one. Kivin shapir to somebody, like they should say, one fifth of pirkus with yadin rego, that's good enough. Elo pshita ad Rabbi Eliezer. Obviously, they must be addressing Rabbi Eliezer. You, Rabbi Eliezer, said zinuk is enough. We, Chachamim, are telling you zinuk is not enough. You need yad or rego. So therefore, vi'i odif. So vi'i odif, if Rabbi Eliezer's zinuk is stronger than the Chachamim, yad or rego, my ab, then what's the ab? So obviously, that's not a valid answer.
That the zinuk is
you can't say that zinuk is stronger than yad or rego, because then the wording of the mission, it doesn't make sense. The chachamim, if the chachamim can't be saying ab, they should be saying, Rabbi Eliezer, you say you need as much as zinuk? No, you don't need that much. All you need is yad or rego. But how does it say? Ab should the fire means no. Rabbi Eliezer, you're being too makel. All you're requiring is zinuk, just that little amount? No, we need something more than that. Yad or rego.
That's more.
It shows more energy, right. So the explanation that we wanted to use of the Mishnah to explain how the Mishnah can work according to Rav Chista and Rava doesn't work. Okay, so it's still not because of Ab. So okay, we could still say, the Gemara doesn't continue with that line of discussion. The Gemara continues with another with Rava's opinion about Pirkus, where Rava says it needs to say Pshita. But the pastors, I guess, they could say, okay, you can't bring any proof from what Rav Shimon says. Look, the halakha is not like him and like Rabbi Eliezer anyway. Okay, maybe they are arguing about the point of the stage of the shvita when it has to take place. Okay.
So Lashon Ad implies that...
Yeah, fine, but they could say, Zinuk is not strong enough, you need Yad or Rego. But nevertheless, they could also implicitly be arguing whether we're talking about it happening at the beginning or the end or whatever. Okay.
No, that's fine. But what's the fact that the Mishnah takes the word Ad?
That means that Yad or Rego is stronger than Zinu. That's the point. We wanted to explain that maybe Rav Nachman Leitzchok Zinu is so strong that could work even at the beginning.
Yeah.
But we're saying that doesn't work that way. The Mishnah says Ad means that Zinu is weaker. Then Yad or Rego. Okay. We said Rava Amma Pirkus Tra'amma B'Sef Shita. Rava, as he said before, said that the Pirkus has to be at the end of Shvita, meaning literally at the end of the Shvita, that shows that it still has Chayus after the Shvita. And Rava says, okay, what about the Zinuk thing? What about the proof we were just bringing from Zinuk? The Tosfos says, actually, because it's not usual for there to be Zinuk at the beginning. Usually Zinuk takes place at the end of the Shvita. So therefore, yes, Rav Shimon can still be saying, if you found Kosvam, lay him down, you're good enough, because it probably means it happened at the end. It's not so likely to happen at the beginning. Okay.
It's a fact. Let me see what it is.
What is Zinuk?
Yeah, let me see if it was beginning.
No, but usually, that's the thing. Rava could be taking the view that Zinuk usually only happens at the end. So therefore, that's good enough. Almost Rava Menon. A lot of Rava says, we're about to get this idea that this Pirkus has to be specifically at the end of the Shchita, not at the beginning like Rav Nachman Leitzchok, not in the middle like Rav Chista, but strictly at the end. So that's it, the Tanya. We learn it a branch there. You have a process that says, Shor Oketa, at the beginning of the Kriya on Yom Tov, on Sukkot, and then, yeah. Shor Oketa, the process of Shor Oketa by A.T. Volley, if an ox or a sheep or a goat is born, then should be 7 days together with his mother, and then from the 8th day and on, you can bring another carbon. So from that first half of the pasuk, shur akesed v'yeh tiyivaleid, we have a number of dinim that we learn from that, so about animals that are possible for carbonus. Shur akesed, when it says an ox or a sheep, chas a kalayim, that means as opposed to a kalayim animal. So if you have, let's say Rashi mentions, for example, let's say you crossbred a sheep and a goat. And they have such things. They call them in English. They call them a geek or a shoat, depending which one was the father and which one is the mother.
Yeah.
So such hybrids exist.
A geek, which means a goat
and a sheep, or a shoat, which is called a sheep and a goat. Yeah. The point, whatever. They're infertile, as hybrids usually are. But whatever. The point is, such a thing could be born. And therefore, since it says sharp oy kesev, that means. We don't need that. Sharp oy kesev means the animal has to be 100% sharp or 100% kesev. No mixing. So oy a's, when it continues or an a's, craft the nidma. That comes to teach us that also an animal that looks similar to another type is also possible. So in other words, you could have an animal that is, Rashi says, you have a 100% goat, it was born from a male and a female goat, but it looks like a sheep. It looks like a sheep or whatever. That's also possible.
Is that so?
Yes, that's what it is. You can eat it. It's a kosher animal, but it's possible for a carbon. Chi yivole, then the pasuk continues, when it is born, that means krafle yotid open, as opposed to an animal born by C-section. Because that's not sheep, that's not yivole. That's not called, well, the blood, that's not yivole. It wasn't born in the normal way. And when the pasuk continues, shivas yamin, when it says that it has to be with his mother for 7 days, so that means exactly what it sounds like. If the animal is less than 7 days, is less than 7 days old, you can't bring it as a carbon. And when the pasuk says it has to be with, or literally under, or instead of its mother, that teaches us that you cannot bring as a carbon an animal that is a yosin. That's what we're going to be focusing on. A yosin means an animal. That's what we have to figure out. A yosin literally means exactly what it sounds like. The animal doesn't have its mother. But we have to figure what does that mean? Hi yosin heishudami. What do you mean if this animal is a yosin? What does it mean? Do you mean that the mother gave birth and then sometime later the mother dies, and you're saying as soon as the mother dies and the baby now, so to speak, becomes an ovul, then he's possible for a carbon? No. What do you mean? How long are you expecting the mother to live? There's no such thing that the mother has to still be alive in order to bring an animal as a carbon. Besides which, also Rashi brings from Torah Kainim that all you need for the animal to be kosher for a korban is that it and its mother's lives overlap even for a short period. As long as the mother was alive for even a short time after the birth, we learn from the psukim over there, Rabbi Yossi says that it's good enough. So obviously, yosin can't mean that the animal was born 6 months to go and then meanwhile 3 months later the mother died and now you're saying it's the mother. Obviously, it must mean Ella Pshita, Zep Peter Schlitz. All right, okay. So Ella, the mace of a hundred yulid day. So are you talking about the other way around? Where the mother died before it gave birth? Well, obviously, Miki Yavala Nafka then, of necessity, the baby was born by C-section, because the mother couldn't have pushed it out. So obviously, it's possible on the ground that Miki Yavala Nafka Yotze Dozman. You don't need Tachas Imo to teach us that this animal is possible. Obviously, what we must be talking about is the mother died in childbirth. But now let's analyze that, says Rava. If you're going to tell me that you have to have that the mother animal was alive all the way until the end of the birth, And only then is the baby kosher. Well, then, in other words, so that's exactly it. The pasuk needs to tell us that that's how it is. It needs to be that the mother animal had to have chayus all the way through the birth. So therefore, in other words, you can't say that the baby should be tossed because of ki yavolid, because the fact of the matter is it was born normally. The mother was able to push it out through the birth canal. So it's not possible on the grounds of yotzi dofen. The only thing you could possible it on the grounds of is yotzin. Because that died during childbirth. The pasuk is telling us that unless the mother was alive for a little bit after the birth, then it's for a tiny bit after the birth, then it's not that. But Rava says, if you're telling me that all you need is the mother doesn't have to have chayus at the end of the birth, and the pasuk, in other words, is telling us that if the mother died in the middle of the birth, during the birth, then you're telling me the baby is possible. Lomali, what do you need a pasuk for? Again, the ki yavolid nafka. Obviously, you can learn that from ki yavolid, because it's still effectively a yotze dofen. The mother at that point is dead. She can't continue pushing it out. Yotze dofen, actually, Rabbeinu Gershom explains that yotze dofen means any case where you have to induce it or whatever, is also included for this purpose under yotze dofen. So in this case, you may get it out through the rectum, but it's not the mother pushing it out in the normal way. You have to pull it out of there. That's considered yotze dofen. So obviously, says Rava, if the mother died sometime during the birth, then it's possible as yotze dofen. What would the pasuk be saying as possible as a yosin if the mother died at the end of the birth? By the same analogy, therefore, you would have to have by shchita. It had to have chayus throughout the whole shchita. It has to show chayus at the end of the shchita. Otherwise, you don't know. It might have had chayus in the middle of the shchita and then died, just like over here. We could have the mother could be starting to give birth and then die. So therefore, that's Rava's proof. Therefore, that you need chayus to be demonstrated at the end of the birth or at the end of the shechita, as the case may be.
From the blood.
From this case. If you're saying, we, yeah. Okay. Omer Rava. So Rava says, Hilchosaki Halmachnita. Bottom line, halacha, as far as the zinim, is, as it says in the following verse. Behema daka shaposhti yad v'loy hachzira. If a behema daka, a small animal, a sheep or a goat, it only extended out its arm or its leg, it didn't bring it back in, stola, then it's possible, because as our Mishnah says, that's only her thought and effort, that's just a reflex motion, stola means it's in the veil, and it's shit, it's possible. No, so we're back to Pilkus. Yeah, we're back to Mr. Kenneth and Pilkus, yeah. So, if it only extended out its arm, stola, then it's possible, because that's not a valid shit. When is that talking about? Beyond only with its foreleg, avol beregel, but with its back leg, where it takes more high to move it. I guess it's a bigger limb. Bein poshta v'le kafka, bein kafka v'le poshta. Whether it stretched it out and didn't flex it, or whether it flexed it and pulled it in and didn't stretch it out, shader than its kosher. With the leg.
Well, backwards.
That's the thing. We're saying there's a difference between the back leg and the front leg.
Yeah.
With the behemoth daka,
so far
what we're saying is like, with a behemoth daka, yeah. If it's doing with the front leg, it has to pull it in, then it would be kosher. If it only stretches it out, it's possible. With the leg, either one. Vamed vernamamurim, continues the braisa, when is that talking about? When is that the daka, only with a small animal, a sheep or a goat. Avo begasta, but with a large animal, a cow or whatever. Bein biyad, bein beregel. It doesn't matter whether it moved the hand, the arm or the leg. Bein poshta v'lekofa, bein kofa v'lekofa. Whether it stretched it out and didn't pull it in, whether it pulled it in and didn't stretch it out. Kshera, then it's kosher because it, I guess, again, it's a bigger animal, so it needs more energy to be able to move anything. But what about when it comes to a bird? Rashi says a different reason. The reason is, Rashi says, Gasta lav urcha b'hachi. It's usual for a behemoth daka to automatically extend out its leg when it dies. It's not usual for a behemoth gasta to do that. Therefore, that's why any one of them is good. Similar to what Shmuel said before, that as long as it's something that's not usually in the sad mitzvah. Right? Okay. What about when it comes to a bird? Afilo le rifresh ela gasta, even if it only made a little bit of a motion with its wing, Rashi explains, before we use the word kishkish, and here we're also going to use the word kishkish, kishkish means a lot of movement, like wiggling. Rifresh means like a small amount of movement, like just a flutter, like fluttering. So even if it only fluttered its wing, like or there's different girsa, that there is the Rambam and some other Rishonim have a girsa, fluttered, even if it only fluttered its eye, then that would be enough, that Rambam learns. But like kishkish, that was not, or it only wiggled its tail. Here you need kishkish, you need an actual wiggling movement. Hareza pirkus, then that's a valid pirkus. Okay, so that's the bottom line, is in other words that you have the difference between the different types of animals and between birds. By the way, as far as that last thing, as far as fluttering its eye or its wing, so since we have the two gears, so then the Noisa Kalam, Shulchan Aruch says, really you should be machmer and see that it did both of them, that it was able to flutter its eye and its wing.
Otherwise,
if it only did one or the other, that might not be true. Gapim means wing. Rifrit alagapim means it fluttered its wing. It's a tiny little flutter. It's a tiny little fluttering. Right. But like kishkish alaznava, you wiggled its tail, where kishkish means, So the question is, my kamash malon. Okay, but what's Rava's chiddush in telling us that? Kulu chnani. We learn all of these in the Mishnah. We said behema daka. Yes. Well, wait. Behema daka shaposhti yad v'leyachira. We said if a behema daka extends out its hand, its forearm, v'leyachira, but it didn't pull it back in. Stula she'ena elay tzaras nefesh, because that's just a reflex movement of . Meaning, obviously, yad ein regel loy. Obviously, when the Mishnah mentioned yoda, it meant not regel. There's different rules for regel. And daka ein gasa loy. And it says daka means that gasa, the rules are different. So we know all that from the Mishnah. Okay, but the chiddush is oifis, through chalais like that. Fine, but the chiddush of what the braisa that Rava is quoting is a bird. It didn't say anything in the Mishnah about a bird. But that we need the braisa to tell us. So while he's mentioning that, then he mentions all the other details as well. Okay, as far as the question whether it needs to be at the beginning, or the end, or the middle, or the end, the halacha is like Rava, that it needs to be literally at the end, not like at the beginning, that's no good, and not even like Rav Chista in the middle, but like Rava at the end. And within that, you have the Shitta of Rashi, that it means at the end, and continuing for a little bit after the end, and you have other Rishonim who learn that not, and when it comes to practical halacha, as usual, we should be maximum like both opinions, as is brought in Shulchan Aruch, and therefore, unless you have, again, all of this is only with Mr. Kenneth, if it didn't move at the end of the Shitta, and a little bit after it, then you have a stop. What? So that's, okay, so we're saying that the spurting out blood, zinuk, is not enough. We established in the Gemara that zinuk is weaker than yad or regal, because it's right. So therefore, we're left with, we have the things that we mentioned over here. Either with a behemoth doctor, it has to pull in its arm, it has to move out or pull in its leg. A behemoth doctor, any movement back or forth of arm or leg. And with a bird, all you need is a fluttering of the wing or the eye, according to the different gearsaris of Rishonim, or movement of the tail.
You said there was something about it at night.
And he's saying, as long as you find zinuk, evidence of zinuk the next morning, then that shows that it was good. Well, therefore, so that means that it's good enough if it happened in the beginning. The answer is, Tosfos supplies the answer that Rava would answer, zinuk doesn't usually happen at the beginning. Zinuk tends to happen only at the end. Therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, who holds that zinuk, which is the weakest kind of thing, is enough, then it's good enough if we found evidence of it the next morning, because obviously when would it have happened? The soap shaker. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is not like them. The halacha is you need, as we said, yad or regal or whatever.
Zinuk, we don't
need that. Zinuk doesn't help one way or the other. Yeah.
What?
It's too weak to count as yad.
Okay.
Yeah.